There are 9 million jobs available right now in these United States, and there are 9 million unemployed people. It's perfect. Why the great mismatch? I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, and this episode of Right Angle is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. And gentlemen, this comes from a story in the Wall Street Journal this week under the headline, Job Openings Are at Record Highs, Why Aren't Unemployed Americans Filling Them? And we'll post a link to that story, at least for people who are subscribers to the Wall Street Journal. You'll be able to click through and read that. But I found this fascinating, and I don't think that this is just a little short-term blip, Stephen Green. There have been surveys done of people who are jobless now. 70% of leisure and hospitality workers, whether they're working now or not, say they're looking for work in another industry. 55% want remote jobs. 31% don't want to go back to their old jobs. And that's up from, by the way, last July, that number was less than 20%. So that's been a relatively large jump. I think, Steve, that the COVID-19 pandemic and its attendant shutdowns and throwing people out of work has done more than just create the problem that most conservatives have already identified, which is government meddling by, you know, subsidizing people to stay home and therefore they're not going to go back to the factory. I think these people won't go back to the factory even when the federal government subsidies stop, because they've realized that there may be another way of life, or at least it's worth looking for one. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think there's quite a bit of truth in that, but there's also some not truth in that. You know what most people do when they're looking for a new career? They work at their present job because it's expensive. Life is expensive. You don't quit your job and then start looking unless, you know, you're in some Hollywood Journey of the Self movie. That just doesn't happen a whole lot. People will lose their jobs and then start looking, but they will generally take the first job they can get. This is an important thing because you need the income coming in. But right now, I just got a check for $500 direct deposit because I have two kids, and I'm not even unemployed. And you've got the $300 a week federal jobless benefit on top of all the rest. And the thing that puts lie to part of that premise there, Scott, is in states that are run by Republican governors that have refused this extra federal $300 a week unemployment benefit, those states have the lowest unemployment rates. Now, that's not to say these restaurant workers aren't doing exactly what you said and looking for a new career, but they're doing it while going back to their old jobs. That's not happening in places like New York and California, of course, because they have Democrat governors who are like, give me the money, because Democrat governors. That said, the inflationary aspect is what I wanted to get into just a little bit here, because we have seen a year and a half worth of supply disruptions, and that is not inflation. You know, a hurricane hits the Gulf Coast and shuts down refineries and gas prices spike. That's not inflation. That's a natural price increase. These things happen. Without boring our viewers with too many of the numbers, I read yesterday, I think it's Zero Hedge, that not only is the government spending huge amounts of money, unprecedented amounts of money, but right now, 39 cents on every dollar that Washington is spending is conjured up by the Federal Reserve. Usually when Washington borrows money, they borrow it from people who buy bonds, investors, banks, that sort of thing. And money goes into the economy at the same rate it's taken out of the economy, because you just gave Washington the cash on loan and they spent it on whatever they spent it on. What the Fed does is they are paying for all of this extra spending by printing up money. They don't actually print it up. It's all digital, but they're just they're inventing it. 39 cents on every federal dollar right now is conjured up out of thin air, and it adds up to $8 billion a day in monopoly money every single day. 7 days a week for the foreseeable future. And this is before Joe Biden gets his $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill through the Senate. So when I hear that there's no inflation that this is just a temporary blip, no, the temporary blip are the price hikes we're still seeing due to COVID. The real inflation is still to come.
And by the way, I've got some stats on Stephen mentioned. Among the 24 states that have announced a June or July end to the supplemental unemployment insurance benefits, the average unemployment rate in May was 4.4%. The rest of the states in the District of Columbia, who set a later end date for that extra subsidy, had a unemployment rate of about 6% in May, although that rate among those states has been falling faster than the states that bailed out early from the program. So that, that whole area is starting to stabilize.
Hang on, Scott. There's a natural unemployment rate between 4 and 5%. That's just churn. So you would not expect states that are already at 4.5% to fall any further.
No, no. No, because they're lower, they're not going to fall any faster than the groups that are higher. That makes a lot of sense. So Bill Whittle, I think what's interesting to me is the longevity of this problem. This isn't the first time this situation has been noticed by the Wall Street Journal or anybody else. Back in the 1930s and 40s, there was a British economist whose name was William Beveridge, which is just the perfect name. And he had mapped out this this difficulty of matching workers with jobs in the economy. In fact, there is a thing called the Beveridge curve that is supposed to describe that. However, right now, you've got this freak situation where both openings and unemployment in some areas are relatively high. And the way this article explains it is, Bill, there are two factors going on. Number one, there's a mismatch in skill set between the jobs that are available and the employees that are available right now, the potential employees that are available. And there's also a geographical mismatch. In other words, there are places where there are a lot of jobs, but not as many people as are needed. And there are other places where there are a lot of unemployed people, but not as many jobs as are necessary. This, Bill, isn't this the kind of thing that a free market economy is supposed to basically work out on its own? And is that happening, or are we panicking over a short-term problem here?
Well, I think it is work. Whether we like it or not, it will work itself out on its own. And I do think we're getting a little overly hysterical, but that's the fashion. We have a problem. It's not a problem. We have a high level of uncertainty because we're facing something very different than what Beveridge faced. Beveridge had to get sprockets over to this place and cogs over to that place, but they were essentially interchangeable pieces, and it was really a location issue. Essentially, it was a transportation issue, right? Because everybody was an industrial area worker. People do not realize that we are living through one of the most turbulent times in human history. It's only happened twice before, right? We stopped being hunters and gatherers, and we decided, well, we're going to be farmers. All right. That was 7,000 years ago. 300 years ago, we said, well, we're going to stop being farmers. Now we're going to be factory workers. Okay. And now we're definitely moving out of the industrial era. Now we're saying, we're not going to be factory workers. You're going to be working on the computer. This is agriculture, industrial era, information age. So this is a monumental thing that's only happened three times in human history. And we are right in the middle of it. So we look at these things. What's going on? What happens when somebody leaves, I'm just going to go ahead and use this term for the sake of the argument. When somebody leaves a second wave factory job, a manufacturing job, and when I say factory job, I'm including things like waiters, right?
Sure.
Something that requires you to physically be there and you know, pull the levers and do the job. When somebody has a chance to realize that, well, I go home and play on a computer, and I like being at home on the computer, and I talk to my family and friends and relatives on the computer, and guess what? I wouldn't have to go to work if I could figure out a way to make money on the computer. Well, this is the way the world is going. When my dad was in his earning years, you started out in the mailroom at a skyscraper, and if you were industrious and hardworking, you'd retire as a vice president. They'd give you your gold watch after 50 years, and you wait 2 years, have your heart attack, and that's the end of the story. But lifetime employment went away quite a while ago, and the thing about the information age economy is it is a gig-based economy. Everything is in motion. All of these structures are assembling themselves and then just about as rapidly disassembling themselves. The best way to think of this was an incredibly powerful quote. I was working on a TV show when I got out here in 1999, and it was the best show I ever worked on. I was an editor on that show. But all the producers, all the editors, we were all just friends, went out, hung out together. It was really just one of those kind of magical things. We had a wrap party at the end of this thing, and we all knew this was going to be our last time together. And this guy said something that I thought was just profound. He said, "Hey, don't feel bad, guys. We're all going to work together again. just not at the same time. And I thought, that's it. That's exactly it. So this entire trend has been happening. What COVID did was COVID just plain pushed this probably 5 or 10 years into the present, pulled it in from the future. We're heading there anyway. But all of a sudden, instead of you kind of just like randomly discover, maybe I could do something from home, but I can't take off 2 weeks to see if I can make money from home. I have to go to work. Well, guess what? Along comes COVID, and now you don't have to go to work because you can't. You cannot go to work. You have 6 months. You have a year. You have a year and a half to sit at home and figure out if there's a way to do this. So it's accelerated a trend that has been happening for a long time. And as we get into a gig-based economy, we realize that there are some real advantages to this. You get to work at home, get to sit your own hours by and large, right? You have more than one income stream. That's the good news. The bad news is there's no security in a gig economy at all, none. When you're working as a gig worker, like I was as a TV editor, you don't know where your next job is coming from. You haven't got the faintest idea how long it's going to last. Best job I ever had in terms of a gig economy was 5-year editing job, but at no point during that 5 years did I know I was going to be employed past the next 3 or 4 months, which is when the next ratings came out, right? So it provides a lot of stress, a lot of uncertainty, but these are just things that we're learning how to do. And so they used to say, how will this kid ever go back to the farm now that he's seen the lights of the big city? Well, what we're really kind of saying now is, how will this guy ever go back to the city now that he's seen life on the farm, right? Mm.
Which is kind of laid back. There ain't much an old country boy that he can't hack. You know, restaurants right now, including fast food places and others in the hospitality industry, are bribing people to come back, offering signing bonuses and the like, and higher pay. And I've seen stories about McDonald's and Whataburger and several other chains that are offering admirable bonuses to people to come back to the store. There are places that are relatively low-skilled jobs, when you talk about the education and experience required to do them, that are actually making it even easier. They're taking people who don't even have those low skills and they're training them because they're willing to open that door. On the other end of the spectrum, high-skilled jobs are actually getting more demanding. The qualifications that it takes to get a job at SpaceX in Boca Chica, Texas, are going to get more demanding because there are a lot of people out there now who know how to program in Python. And so you need to be able to up your standards if you're going to shoot for Mars. And a lot of companies are able to do that. And so this is an age-old problem of the mismatch between workers and professions. And I don't really care about the vast sweeping macroeconomic questions. I'm thinking about that one person who's watching this video right now. I'm thinking about the person who is unemployed against their will right now and thinking, well, things have got to come back. I'm going to keep sending out resumes. I'm going to stay active on Indeed.com. I'm going to try to, conjure up a way to get back into the career that I was in. But what Bill Whittle just said is true. We are at a hinge point. We are at a juncture in history where things are changing. Knowledge work is legitimate work. And middle managers, if there are any left, got almost completely washed out of the system in the last 20 to 30 years, along with a whole realm of people that were known as secretaries. They don't even have a secretary's day anymore. They call it like administrative assistant day because it's become almost an insult to call somebody a secretary. There are whole industries and categories that don't exist. I can remember when I worked for a local newspaper and they decided that they would go to a computer-generated layout on a computer screen instead of the way they used to do it, which was literally guys taking little lead representations of letters and putting them on a rack and then running a piece of paper over with ink and creating these wax molds. And it was this very time-intensive and manually intensive process. And they announced that they were going to this, I forget what the term for it is, but this basically computer publishing. And I raised my hand in this meeting and I said, well, what about all these guys who are doing this job, that they've been doing for 30, 40 years in some cases? We can't just throw them out on the streets. Like, I was the defender of the poor, mechanized laborer. They didn't hear me and they just went ahead and did it. they went into the computer thing and the entire industry changed. And then even the terrible pay job that I had back then as a local journalist, that is getting replaced rapidly by people who are willing to do it for free in some cases, or people who are getting paid vast amounts of money to do reporting online, but they don't work for any newspaper. It is really a miraculous transformation. All of that to say that I think that this COVID moment is entirely salutary for the economy, for the country, and could be for you if you could seize that moment. But if you cling to this and say, I have to have what I had before, what Bill talked about with the gig economy, and he'd say there's no stability in that, there's no security in that, there was no security in the W-2 economy either. At any moment, you could be gone. I've often been amazed at how short a period of time I need to be at a company before I become one of the elder statesmen of the company. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Where are all the people that I started with? So all of that to say, my friend, this is the time to start thinking creatively. This is the time to start learning more. This is the time to follow a passion that is profitable. This is the time to develop multiple streams of income. This is a time to figure out how to parlay an extraordinary moment in history into something that you'll look back on and tell your children and grandchildren, and they will brag about you of how in the midst of this great mismatch, you found a way to do something that would make the world better for other people and that therefore would make the world better for you and your family. And I believe that you can do that. The entire work of this, though, is not the kind of work that you're accustomed to. It's the kind of work that happens right here behind the eyeballs in the believe center of the brain. And that's what you need to do. You need to come to believe that you can do this, that the whole world can change, and that you can be part of it, an exciting part of it. And I hope that that's what happens for you. And I hope you find encouragement in what we just said here today. I look forward to your comments in the comments section. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members of BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.